Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Fuck.
Imagine if the whole podcast is just going.
Fuck.
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 Fuck. Fuck.
I think I should leave this in because it kind of sums up where we are. This is an Arscast Extra. We are recording atypically on the night of the game, or quite shortly after the game. Normally, we have a little bit of time to reflect and to gather our thoughts. So if it's not as coherent and if it's a bit more sweary and a bit more angry than usual, that might be that. And, you know, James, you asked me if we could do the podcast tonight. And I was thinking, you know, if we win, this would be fine. It'd be great.
What a way to spend your Sunday evening.
Yeah, just come upstairs, have a drink, shoot the breeze, talk about Arsenal winning a North London derby. That'd be fine. I don't mind that at all. And now, well, it's a bit different because, well, it's not that I don't have a drink. I do have a drink, and I hope you have a stiff one there yourself. A drink, that is. it feels a bit, you know, less fun than I was hoping.
Less festive fun than we perhaps imagined. The champagne is on ice. But the rum is out, so you know there is that. I mean, that's the noise, isn't it? That is the noise.
Yeah, the exasperated horse. I think we should trademark it. Yeah.
Where to begin, Andrew?
Where to begin? I suppose team selection is a good place to begin. I think we should go through this game because it is one I think that deserves and merits quite a bit of analysis, even if it wasn't one we are going to enjoy.
Cross by cross, we'll go through it.
All 417 of the crosses analysed. We've got sound effects. A good cross sounds like this. And a bad cross sounds like... So, you know, it's going to be hard to tell the difference. Team selection.
Yeah.
System.
I was surprised.
Were you surprised that he didn't go back to the three at the back thing that he normally did in big games?
Yeah, I was. Yeah. I mean, we talked about it. I thought he would do that. I think Partey's availability changed that in his mind, potentially. Mm. I think he is sort of seen as the guy who can kind of give us enough stability in midfield to go with four at the back.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, I was surprised. You know, it meant dropping Lacazette into that number 10 role, which I think it's safe to say he was untried in at this level in the Premier League. What else was I surprised about? I mean, that was about it. I kind of thought Xhaka would play, having not played a minute in midweek. That seemed to me to be an indicator that he was going to start this game.
Yeah. Thomas Partey, then.
Should he have been out there?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, clearly, with the benefit of hindsight, no is the answer here. I'm curious as to what you think about where... I'm not going to say blame should be apportioned here, because... Look, I can understand Mikel Arteta wanting to pick Thomas Partey for a game like this. He's clearly the best midfielder that we have. Like you say, he does allow us, when fully fit, I think, to play with this back four in perhaps a more effective way. He didn't look 100% to me. And I say that, you know, having only witnessed him a couple of times in an Arsenal shirt so far. So, you know, we don't have this sort of broad spectrum of performances to analyze and hold up against. Well, remember when he was this, and you can see clearly he's not that. You know, he, I think, the noises that Arteta was making before the game were that Partey himself was really pushing to be involved, right?
Yeah.
So do you think there's an element of, again, blame is perhaps the wrong word, and you want to maybe give credit to a player who wants to push themselves and to be out there and to help their team and everything else, to play in a big game. You want that kind of attitude, I suppose. But is there a danger that he sort of said he was fitter than he was in order to play, and the club looked at what problem he had and sort of decided, well, if he says he's okay, I know the scans show that he's in bits. Mm-hmm. He's fucked. Yeah.
But he's like, half a hamstring.
Yeah, he says he's fine, though. So, you know, tempting as it is, you know, let's play him.
David Luiz says he can play on. I mean, yeah, I think I find it very hard to blame players in this situation. Of course, Thomas Partey wants to play. I think what worries me, I was happy he was playing. I was really delighted he was in the lineup, especially when Spurs had Ndombele missing as well. I thought that feels like a positive thing for us.
Mm.
Nevertheless, the fact that we did rush him back feels like quite a desperate move. And that worries me. Mm. I mean, I understand it on the one hand, given our other midfield options, but I also think it speaks to maybe just a little bit of panic, you know, and a sense of we've got to get this guy out there. It's our one shot. And having that degree of reliance on any player is a worry, I think.
Is it any more desperate than, you know, picking Willian week in, week out? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a different meaning of the word, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose what I mean is that, you know, there's this contradiction at play with Arsenal, this sort of tension between the long term and the short term. And this is one where we've really prioritised the short term and probably cost ourselves in the long term.
Yeah, well, that was my fear going into this, that if we did rush him back and if he wasn't 100% fit and if he picked up an injury again, you know, we need him for other games that we have to play this season. You know, the schedule is very busy. We've got a lot of, like, every game is fucking impossible looking at the moment for Arsenal. I know that's maybe not the reality, even if it doesn't quite feel like that. But you look at the games and you think, well, fuck. We need, you know, our best players fit and firing, you know, consistently. And, you know, I suppose the trade-off is difficult. If you said to somebody, and you obviously can't guarantee this in any way, Partey misses the derby and we lose the derby, but we have him for, you know, the rest of the season. He's fit and he contributes and he helps, you know, make the team a bit more solid, et cetera, et cetera. Would you take it or would you risk it for, you know, just one game? And I know the derby is a special game as well. It has an impact on the way a manager thinks about the team he's going to pick.
I think also it tells you a story about his other options, right? About what else we have in central midfield. The fact that he felt the need to do that. You know, what does that tell you about his confidence in Granit Xhaka and Dani Ceballos?
I mean, he picked Xhaka again, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe offset by Partey a bit, I guess. Yeah.
You know, I just think that is part of the story too. They gambled and they lost, you know, in a big way.
Well, as we're on him, what about the incident leading up to the second Spurs goal where he went off the pitch?
So I think that's mad. I think that's mad. I cannot believe that he... I'll tell you why I can't believe it. Because he hasn't been here as long as the others. I expect that sort of naivety from an Arsenal player, but not from a guy who spent 5 years under Diego Simeone or whatever it is. You know, I kind of, when we buy a player, I hope that they don't contract the Arsenal too nice, too naive thing so quickly.
Yeah.
I know he's our best player probably. And I thought even on one leg, he was pretty good in that first half. But I find it staggering. What did you think?
I also found it a bit weird. I'm looking at the whole thing again, and there's a passage of play where he makes a tackle. He slides in to make a tackle.
I remember it. Yeah, and that must have been the moment.
Yeah, holding puts the ball forward, and we go on this counter where we, I think it was Hector Bellerin who crossed. But as he's, just after he's made the slide tackle, you can see he stands up and he's looking at the sideline. He's looking at Arteta. We move the ball forward, Saka to Lacazette. Good pass from Lacazette to Bellerin. Don't ask me what Aubameyang is trying to do there. I think that's disastrous from him. Spurs come forward and break. And this is, I think, when Arteta tries to shove him back on the pitch and he can't run, you know, yeah, which is it's just fucking...
looks horrendous. It
absolutely... I mean, well, I think it is a bit horrendous. What I think I might have done... if I were Mikel Arteta, was just try and convince him to stand in that space.
Yeah.
And if play came down there, I don't really care what you do, you know, as long as it's not a red card offence to stop the play, if you can do anything at all, you know what I mean? Take a yellow card, whatever it is.
I tweeted about this and said I thought it was crazy, and a lot of people have defended Partey, and I think... honestly, I think that's because he's sort of a new signing and flavour of the month. I think if another Arsenal player had done that, it would be... And listen, I understand he's hurt. Maybe he's not thinking clearly. Maybe he's panicking himself. Maybe he's despondent. But things he could do, like you say, stand in the space. You know, Spurs see him walk off the pitch and another man goes forward. So they end up 4-2.
You know,
they immediately... recognise that opportunity and capitalise on it. Just stand in the space, do what Granit Xhaka did in the second minute of the game and rugby tackle somebody. As crap as that is, if you get yourself booked but you halt something, do it. Or, and I don't know if this would work, but go down on the pitch. Go down on the pitch, everybody waves, everybody whistles. You know, there's a kind of weird pressure on Spurs to put it out. Might not work.
No, it won't. Not with a Mourinho team. I mean, I'd be very surprised if it did.
It'll work better than walking off the pitch, though.
Sure.
I'd say.
Sure. Sure.
I can't believe it from a really senior pro. Anyway. But that's, you know, that's a small detail. But...
yeah,
make a big difference. And it, listen, it's not his fault he's hurt. You know, that's...
No, for sure. For sure. And, you know, it was part of the risk. I just wonder, you know, maybe, like you say, he was a bit despondent. He went in for that tackle and felt it go and he thought he should get off the pitch. I don't know. But, yeah, just stand there if you can. Stand in that space and do something. But, you know, that's not the reason why we lost this game at all. So I just thought we'd get that out of the way first. I mean, it's part of the reason for the second goal, but, you know.
It is. But it's worth saying they're still outnumbering us, even if he's fit and even if he's running there.
Yeah.
And actually, as much as I found that moment, it didn't annoy me, it just kind of bemused me. I just think it's really rare to see a player leave the pitch of their own volition without anyone ready to come on.
Yeah.
I found the first goal more annoying because it was so obvious, because we had 11 fit players and we still fell into that trap.
Okay, so how... okay, talk me through your thoughts on that first goal then.
Well, listen, it's a great finish, right? You know, that's all well and good. But for every wonder goal, there's another side to the story, isn't there? And I just felt that, like, I'm going to watch it again now. But my feeling going into this game was really one of... I mean, it won't surprise you to know that it comes from a pretty crappy Hector Bellerin cross from the right-hand side. Was really one of... Spurs were always going to do one thing in this game. They were going to defend deep. They were going to get the ball out to Kane. And Kane was going to look for Son. I mean, it's literally what they do constantly. And I suppose when I watch it, I've got two major issues. The first is, I suppose, or maybe it's three. The first is how overcommitted we are. I think we have overcommitted going forward, given their ability on the counter-attack. I know we do want to get forward. I know we want to score goals. But I think in the 12th minute of a game, we were a little bit ahead of ourselves. Then I think when Kane receives the ball, when it's cleared away...
take him out.
Yeah, take him out. Where is somebody on him? You know, I felt like Granit Xhaka, it looked like, was sort of detailed to track Kane, and that's why he committed that crazy foul early on. Mm. But he's nowhere near him at this point.
But Partey is, though.
Yeah, Partey is. Maybe he's feeling his injury there. I don't know. Gabriel is close-ish, but not close enough. Kane does very well. He spins it in behind. And then it's kind of Keystone Kop stuff. I mean, I understand the backing off, but nobody gets near Son, do they?
No. I mean, holding, I understand to an extent, but you've got to engage at some point as a defender, not run away from him. Holding was more concerned about the guy overlapping.
I mean, I'll tell you this. Son, the last two games for Spurs, played on the right.
Mm.
And then this game, he went over to the left. And I think if you look at our back four, Tierney and Gabriel, as opposed to Holding and Bellerin, I think it's clear which side's stronger.
From a defensive point of view, for sure. For sure.
I mean, what did you make of that guy? I it might sound harsh because I appreciate it's a brilliant take from Son, but it was just, maybe it was just how obvious it was that I found so frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, we'd started pretty well. I think I wrote in the live blog, we had a decent enough start. I mean, not brilliant or anything, but it was decent. And then you get hit on, what, their first counterattack.
Yeah.
You know, it is, it's like someone telling you they're going to slap you in the face and you don't believe them, and then they slap you in the face. You know, it's, and then being unhappy about it. I told you I was going to do this.
I'll tell you what as well. Take it right back to where we lose the ball. Bellerin crossing in for the right-hand side. The position that he crosses from is a really bad position to cross from. There's data that shows that if you cross from, like, outside the penalty box, basically, you know, deep, it is very ineffective, statistically.
It's a good job we learned our lesson and didn't do that for the rest of the game then.
Well, exactly. And, like, you know, if you're crossing from areas which are deeper, which are, like, beyond the penalty box line, your success rate is higher. Not high, but higher. So chucking it in from that angle is annoying. And then I think, just the response to it. I mean, I think having nobody close to Kane is really the killer blow, isn't it? Because it enables him to take it in the centre circle, release it, and Son's so dangerous. I mean, Bellerin gets back, but I mean, doesn't
look falls great over, in doing so. And
that's not a good look for him. I was just so pissed off. I'm still quite pissed off. I don't know if that's clear.
It's like the game that we played back in July or whatever it was.
It's really similar in some ways. Don't you think? I thought the game pattern was similar. And depending on how you feel about the manager at any one point, you'll interpret it differently. You might be like, well, you know, at least we tried to be progressive. We had the ball. I wouldn't want to be one of those teams who doesn't have the ball. You know, you're going, what's the point in having the ball? We can't do anything.
Literally can't do anything about it. I mean, what we should have done is, you know, hindsight again being a wonderful thing, but play that three at the back, sit off. Even when they had spells of possession, it wasn't like we were pressing them or trying to win the ball back really quickly because we were absolutely afraid of getting bypassed and getting counterattacked.
The Sky analysis was bizarre, I thought. You know, there was a lot of talk on, I don't know if you had the same commentary, but people saying, well, Arsenal be pleased, you know, they've had so much of the ball in the second half. And I was thinking, they've let us have it.
Yeah. Like, they literally did not want the ball.
Mourinho almost never wants the ball. His teams don't want the ball, you know. So it would have been a much more interesting game plan, I think, to let them have it, see what they can do. Instead, we just set up for them to play exactly how they would have wanted to play.
Yeah, and two goals on the counter attack meant that they could go in and they could sit there in the second half and let us have the ball and. They're playing a team that hasn't scored a Premier League goal from open play in how long? Oh, we scored against Wolves,
Four
didn't we?
Yeah. Million.
Yeah, no, we years. Scored against Wolves, didn't we? Didn't we?
Yeah,
didn't
I think we did.
Who scored? I can't remember. It's all a terrible blur in my mind. This dark greyness.
No, I don't think we did. We did score, yes. We'd scored one goal. It was Gabriel, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right.
From a
Willian cross,
I'm just looking at the second goal. Again, just for other things. I mean, again, it's a Hector Bellerin cross that goes nowhere.
Well, do you think that Aubameyang should do more with that ball?
Maybe. I mean, we'll get on to him.
Okay.
but okay, maybe.
That's
I think
ominous.
Well, there's a mis there's a misunderstanding, isn't there? I mean, he...
Yeah.
But he does appear to sort of run into an area where he's sort of not really available. I think he wants Bellerin to play that pass across the sort of six-yard box. Do you see what I mean? Like in front of him. And it goes behind him. So I
Yeah. I know what you
mean. What do you think?
I don't know. It's hard to separate because, you know, he's just in such bad form and he looks unhappy. He doesn't look himself at all. I'm sure we'll get onto him. I'm sure he's got questions. Bellerin's delivery was not great, even though he did make our best chance. Was it our only real chance? There was one, a header for Lacazette. I think he provided the ball for the... ball across the box that if Lacazette had kept running, he might have had a chance with.
I remember well. I'm just looking at the second goal again because... You know, we've talked about the Partey thing, and I really don't want it to seem like it's all on him because it isn't. When the Bellerin's cross is intercepted, I think it's Sissoko. He breaks away, and if you look, he's got four Arsenal players around him. He's got Lacazette, Saka, Tierney, and Granit Xhaka, who is very, very high, somewhat inexplicably. Mm. And it means that when Sissoko plays the pass out to number 18, who I guess is Lo Celso.
Yeah.
He's just absolutely clear. Obviously, Partey's not in the game at that point. And you know, they execute it well. They execute it really well.
But. Yeah, you could. I think you could ask why is Xhaka so high up the pitch when...
I think so.
You know.
I mean, if Partey is going to go off, does Xhaka know that? Do you know what I mean? Like, There's no way if Xhaka know. I mean, Xhaka can't possibly know, can he? And be pushed that high?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. It's just a tactical.
I'm watching again. Xhaka. Right, yeah, he's following in. He's completely switched.
Unaware.
Not unaware. He doesn't know anything about Partey, but he doesn't know anything about the two Tottenham midfielders that are standing behind him.
Yeah.
He's charging into the box, maybe looking for the ball to break to him on the edge of the box. You know, when we talk about players lacking attacking intent and ambition, but that's not the time or the place for him to do that.
Can I say that's one of the things that frustrated me about this game is that I actually in the first half thought, oh, Arsenal are getting numbers forward here. You know, you could see there were more people in the box than I'm accustomed to seeing. You know, Lacazette was getting in there, Saka was getting in there. But it's exactly what you sort of fear will happen. That, you know, Arteta was so reluctant to kind of set up in a more attacking way because he thought, I will get done on the counter. And unfortunately, as soon as he's done that, it's played out exactly like that. And I just don't think today was the day to try that.
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, maybe there was pressure to try and get a result and win the game and turn things around and everything else, and that's in your thinking. But I think I said this to you on Friday when we were talking, you know, this was a must-not-lose game. You know,
every
derby is a game that you want to win. Of course you want to win it because of the extra stuff that goes with it. But in the context of this one, as important as a win would have been, and as fun as it would have been, and, you know, how we could all be sitting here now taking positives from, right, okay, now our season can start, etc., etc., losing is a real kick in the balls. You know, if you come away from there with a point, it's not great, but, like, fuck it, it's a point, it's a draw away from home. You've kind of stopped the rot a little bit in terms of the games that you've lost in the Premier League. You know, yeah, losing was stupid. And I think the way we set up today was not smart. It wasn't smart. You know, it wasn't smart to do it knowing that part of the reason perhaps that we played with the system that we did was because Partey was available to us. But knowing that there was a risk that he wasn't going to be able to complete 90 minutes, that he might exacerbate his injury, you know, it just, like, are you telling me that Partey couldn't have played and made a good contribution when we had played with a back three, for example, something like that? You know, he definitely could have. He could have done, you know, good work in midfield, even as part of that too. So, I don't know.
I also think we set up and played in a way that did a guy who was potentially an injury risk, absolutely no favours. Like, the way we played, Xhaka was next to Partey nominally, but he was dropping in quite often alongside Gabriel in the build-up play. And again, there was at times that sort of shape where it was a one-man midfield.
Yeah.
And if you've got a guy with a dodgy hamstring, don't make him a one-man midfield.
Well,
you know?
Exactly. Don't make him a one-man midfield, and don't put a guy beside him who can't fucking run, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you could ask, maybe he's not everybody's favourite player, you know, but surely someone like Elneny, in those circumstances, who's got the engine, who can run all day, who's tidy in possession, who'll keep the ball moving when he gets it, you know, he's not going to get... he's not going to be the guy high up the pitch like Xhaka was, I don't think, in those circumstances. So that selection decision, I don't think, worked.
Xhaka was picked for his crossing, I imagine. We just had to get everyone in the team who could cross. I mean, the other thing to say, by the way, is, you know, like you say, we set up an attacking way, we went for the win. But again, what worries me is, like, that trying to save our season by winning this game, again, it feels a little bit desperate.
Well, yeah, how much damage have we done now? How much damage have we done to Partey? How much damage have we done to midfield? Yeah. How much damage have we done to confidence confidence of the fans and the belief that fans have in the team and the manager? And I'm sure we're going to talk about that in a little while as well. You know, we've done ourselves a real injury today.
Yeah,
we really have.
We're like Thomas Partey, we're just like that. And also, I have to say, I know anything can happen in football. I've rarely been so sure a game was over at half time as I was on this occasion. There's the noise again. But I just, you know, against a Mourinho team who have no desire to come out and play. They're never going to overcommit. They're never going to take an unnecessary chance. And us, completely unable to break down teams at the best of times. And with Partey off, I just thought, well, that is the game gone.
Yeah, me too. How do you look at the second half then? Do you look at it as...
Did you see that stat, by the way?
Which one?
Yeah, there's a few.
Which
Duncan
one?
Duncan Alexander, who I think works for Opta.
Yeah.
He said, football is a game of two halves, but Arsenal have had the fewest second half shots of any of the 92 teams in the Premier League and English Football League.
Holy shit.
This season.
Holy shit. Do you know what? It doesn't surprise me. I mean, it's staggering, but it also doesn't. Does not surprise me. I'm sorry.
The lowest of the 92 Football League teams.
I'm choking here. Not choking up. I'm literally choking.
That is unbelievable. Isn't it? I mean, I know what you're saying. It feels true. But, like, let's get the League 2 table up. That means we're having less second half shots than Barrow. Than Stevenage, Mansfield, Harrogate. Harrogate are having more shots in the second half.
You know what?
Crawley.
Just keep going. Just keep shouting other team names that are better than us. Look, I've...
Grimsby Town.
I've had an issue with this for a little while, and I think I've said it to you before, is that... Okay, it's exacerbated by the fact that we're in a situation too often where in the second half of games we need goals, where we need to turn the screw. We are literally unable to turn any kind of screw. We are, what's the opposite of a screwdriver? We're that.
We are in a team, in a league of people with screwdrivers, we're like trying to use our thumbs. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like desperately.
Yeah, it's a problem. Like, we don't and can't build attacking momentum in games. And even today, you know, Tottenham came out, sat deep and said, well, they're not going to get through the middle of us. And to some extent, I'm not saying I have sympathy for this because, you know, to some extent, when you're playing a team that's really solid down the middle and you've no way of breaking them down there and they give you the wings, you know, what else is there to throw in a load of crosses? I mean, I'm not saying that's the only way to do it, but in the circumstances, when you've got players in those wide areas to put balls in the box, you know, I guess it's a consequence of that to a certain extent. But they loved it. Meat and drink to them. There were a couple of decent crosses from Arsenal. I think Tierney put a good one for Aubameyang and another header that missed the target. I think, I'm not saying he should score, but he should certainly hit the target. Lacazette had one saved, didn't he? But beyond that, they just fucking headed them away and hacked them away and cleared them and stayed solid. And then they brought on, you know, another defensive midfielder to sit right in front of the middle of the pitch, in front of the centre halves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Harry Kane was in there heading them away.
I mean, they did the same thing against Man City and Chelsea, where they have a back four and then two central midfielders in front who drop in,
yeah,
and they're a back six. And at one point in this game, they went to a back seven. It was a back five with another two midfielders dropping in. So, it's, you know, they've got Eric Dier in there, Alderweireld, a couple of lumps. If you chuck it in the air, they'll win it. 9 times out of 10. I mean, how many headers has Aubameyang scored for Arsenal? I think it's 3.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not his game. It's not Lacazette's game. It's kind of surreal to see it adopted in that way. And I have to say, you know, alarm bells are ringing for me when I hear Mikel Arteta come out after the game and say they did exactly what I wanted to do, they wanted them to do. You know, that is alarm bells for me.
Yeah. It is, isn't it? Because, you know, you could come out and say, well, look, that was a way we had to play today because Tottenham forced us down the sides and, yeah, you know, whatever. But
we can't go through the middle anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
What are we going to do? Play it into Lacazette and he's going to split the defence with an eye the needle pass. It's not even his game.
No, and you know what? We've given Lacazette criticism here on the podcast. I thought at least he put in a shift.
I liked his spirit, I have to say.
Yeah, look, I think what it says about the construction of this squad and this team, that he's playing in that role, that's another thing, you know?
Yeah.
Credit to him for trying, and there was a moment late in the second half where he got back and he made a tackle towards the edge of our box, you know, at least on a day when not much else was worth talking about. At least he sort of put in the effort that you want to see from every Arsenal player in a North London derby.
I thought he was good in that front. I thought Kieran Tierney was as you'd expect him to be. I thought Gabriel tried to take initiative, you know, push forward.
And I thought Ceballos was all right when he came on, but I think it was to do a little bit with game state as well, in that, you know, you could say in the second half, well, look, Arsenal dominated possession and they had loads of crosses into the box and they, you know, X amount of, touches in the opposition box and all of those kind of things. You know, if you want to look at those as positives, I guess you can. But to me, it just speaks more to the way that Tottenham were happy for us to play the game.
They let us do that. I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Look at the changes that they made. They never sought to redress the midfield balance. They never sought to bring on Gareth Bale, for example, for an extra counter-attacking threat.
Yeah.
They just shuffled around the back line, said, you keep chucking in crosses, guys. We've got this all day long. And, yeah, Ceballos, you know, he was fine, but he had time. He had space.
Exactly.
Bukayo Saka, I thought, as usual, was busy, you know, looked a bit dangerous until, as is becoming an increasing thing, he sort of slightly got kicked out of the game.
Yeah.
And that keeps happening to him because he's a young guy and he's probably our best player. So, yeah it was... do you know what? The thing is, like, Arsenal weren't... I don't think Arsenal were as bad as they've been in some recent games. I don't think. And I think there's no massive shame in... Well, there is shame, always in
massive shame.
In failing in any way against Spurs. But, you know, Man City didn't score against this Spurs team. Chelsea didn't score against this Spurs team. But
It's not so much that we didn't score. It's that we conceded goals in a way which, if everybody could see that that's how it was going to happen, if it was going to happen, that's how it was going to happen.
And what pisses me off and worries me is that, like, we, you know, that's not what I expect a
well-organized, well-prepared team to do, right?
And that's the thing we had. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me ask you about this. Ainsley Maitland-Niles is on the bench. He had a great game, albeit against Rapid Vienna, et cetera. We know. But he had a great game in midfield. We're losing 2-0 away from home. We take off Hector Bellerin and we put Bukayo Saka, who is, you know, maybe our most effective attacking player aside from Lacazette, for all that that entails, at right back. Mm-hmm. Why don't we put Ainsley Maitland-Niles at least on the pitch in that position? You know? Or why don't we put Ainsley Maitland-Niles on the pitch instead of Granit Xhaka with 20 minutes to go? You know?
Yeah.
Why don't we...
Xhaka's on a booking as well, don't forget.
Yeah, I don't know what minute it was that Xhaka got booked, but, it was about 75 minutes or something like that, if I remember. So why don't we do that? Where was Reece Nelson today? Do we know if Reece Nelson had an injury, or was it a case that he's just not in the squad?
He just didn't make the bench.
So when, knowing as well that you've got, like, a player whose fitness is hugely questionable in Partey. We had Elneny on the pitch, or on the bench. We had Ceballos on the bench. We had Joe Willock on the bench. Do you really need three central midfield players? Mm. You know? Could
Ceballos,
Nelson...
Elneny and Willock and Maitland-Niles and does Maitland-Niles. Feel like a lot.
Yeah, of course. Maitland-Niles, you know, is versatile, as we talked about, and he could play everywhere. But, like, one of those... And I'm, you know me, I like Joe Willock, but, you know, in a game like this, when you need to change something from the bench, what have you got? What literally have Arsenal got on the bench to do anything different? We had Danny Ceballos, who came on for Partey, and we know what Ceballos is. He's a different kind of midfielder. You know, he can pick a pass when there's one there, when he's got time and space, but, like, he's not a game changer. He doesn't give you anything different.
Mm.
Well, at least Nelson is... you know, let's say going into this game, you have some slight concerns that the fucking washed up 32-year-old you brought in from Chelsea, who's played like a bag of shit all season, you might worry that he could play like a bag of shit again. What if you had a player on the bench who, you know, could just maybe come on instead of him and maybe not play like a bag of shit?
I'd love to think that Reece Nelson's delivery would be better, but I'm not
talking about
sure
his delivery. I'm really not talking about his delivery.
Mm.
I'm just talking about the ability to change something, to do something different in the game. You know, Nelson is quick. He can take players on. He can try at least, and add a bit of drive to us in the final third. Maybe it would make no difference in the grand scheme of things, but at least it would be fucking something. You know, Eddie came on and you've got three strikers on the pitch and still can't create a shot really for any of them. And that's not to disrespect Eddie.
As many strikers as we like on.
Well, didn't Arteta say that in his interview on Sky? He said, you know, we can have 55 strikers out there if you don't score goals. But, I mean, it strikes me that we are the only team in the world that could actually play 55 strikers and still not score a goal.
Well, that's because, you know, you've got to get the ball there. And I just think, I agree about the balance of the bench. I mean, listen, we're paying for that Pepe red card to an extent. You know, that we are a player light, for sure. And I think there was actually a case to, like, if I'd played the three at the back, I might have played Maitland-Niles left wing back, and I, you know, then you would have had
Saka on the bench,
possibly, as someone who could change things. Because I agree with you. When I looked at that bench, I was like, "There's not much here that inspires me that this is going to dramatically shift." I mean, the thing is, you know, we didn't get beat. It's a funny one. Like, we didn't get battered, you know. We didn't get beat four or five. And we...
Were you worried at halftime that we might?
To be honest, no, because I remember Mourinho's Chelsea. And I remember that they get 2-0 up in home games and then they do fuck all. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
That's what they do. He loves that scoreline. 2-0. 2-0, sit in, job done.
Mm.
And, you know, it's what he does and he's very experienced at it. But I think, yeah, we lost this game on details, really, and, you know, sort of stupid, dumb decisions. And that's really annoying. Like, it, you know, it's not like they were miles and miles better than us, but we just allowed them to do what they do.
Yeah.
And I tell you where they are better than us is their efficiency in attack. I mean, it's just a complete... At the moment, it's another level to what we're producing. And that's a very painful reality.
Yeah, I mean, there was a moment in commentary where they said... you know, the difference is Kane and Son, two world-class striker, two world-class players. Yeah, and I'm thinking, well, you know, we've got Aubameyang.
None of them's on the money that we've paid.
Well, I don't even mean the money. I don't really, you know, that's not really the issue. Maybe it is an issue that we might discuss, but I don't mean it from that point of view. I mean, a few weeks ago, everyone was delighted that, you know, one of the only world-class players in our squad was signing on. And you know, it's not like we're... trying to score goals with Kaba Diawara and Julio Baptista. You know? There is talent there. There is quality there. We're not seeing it. Clearly, we're not seeing it. But it's not as if, you know,
we don't have
players like that of our own. They said, like, put Kane and Son in the Arsenal team and it'd be all very different. And I was thinking, would it? Would it really?
It's a really good question. Like... I actually had a conversation with a Spurs fan, who's a mate of mine, before this game, and we were talking about the two teams. And actually, he said the same thing. He said, I don't think these teams are that different, but Spurs have got two strikers who are just flying, and Arsenal don't.
But isn't the reason they're flying is that the team is set up in a way to make them really effective? Like, I know it's, you know...
There's a strategy, basically. I mean, we can all see what it is. You know, we all see what the job Harry Kane is doing this season.
Yeah.
Playing in that, you know, 9.5 space. Arteta must have known about it. Everyone knows about it.
They're not able to do anything about it. And that's, you know, obviously because they're good players in top form. No question about that. There's no arguing with that. But it's not a surprise to anybody when they do what they do. And they did what they did today. And we're playing with a world-class striker, you know, whether he's on the left or he's in the middle, wherever he is. We're playing in a way which makes his presence in the team... almost redundant, and you're thinking, well, what would it take to get us back on track? And the word that kept going through my head was Fellaini.
Fucking hell.
You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think I'm wrong. If you know, I'm not saying that he don't misquote me here and say
where is he? Can we give him a call?
I'm not advocating for his signing, but I'm saying that if you're a team that plays football the way that we're playing football, he'd be fucking better than the guys we have at what we're, you know, whatever
it is.
He's
in China. He's with Shandong. We need to get Edu
now
on the phone.
It's not going to happen now. You know, he'll have to quarantine and all that.
He's only 33, Andrew. A three-year deal surely is in the offing.
£250,000 a week.
He fits in. You know, we've got David Luiz with the hair, but we lost Guendouzi. We need another one. Another coiffured midfielder. I mean... That is a frightening thought, but it's not crazy. I mean, if you look at the other teams that are slinging in a lot of crosses in the Premier League, it's people like West Ham. And who've they got? That bloke Suchek, who's about 7'2", who is a real threat. We don't have anyone like that.
No, and who are we playing next? Burnley.
I don't know. Can we buy Chris Samba and put him up front?
We're playing Burnley next.
Right, well...
Right. Well, you know what they like?
Heading. You know what
we should
do? Buy Chris Wood.
They like
heading. We buy Chris Wood before we play them.
That is the kind of football that we're playing. And last week when Arteta made those comments about, you know, he's called them something else tonight. Did he say penalty box entries or something like that?
Oh, God.
Was that what it was? Like, we're making extra... And he talked about it last week when we made all those crosses against Wolves. And my interpretation of it was that, you know, when he defended it, my interpretation was that if we were to do that again, he would like us to do it better. Not necessarily that he would like us to do that again week after week after week. And then seeing the way we played today, and I know there are reasons for it, and the, you know, what he said, it's quite worrying.
Yeah, it really is.
It's quite worrying that this is seen as some effective method of creating chances for our strikers. And actually, was it, I thought Jeff Shreves, I'm sure we have it here on RSpot News. I'm sure Jeff Shreves asked him a really good question. Something along the lines of, you know, are you creating good enough chances? Because he was talking about, like, if we don't score goals, we can put 55 strikers on, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And then Jeff Shreves said to him, but are you creating good enough chances? And he said, we created more than Spurs for sure, and they scored two goals and we had zero. The same happened last week against Wolves. I think that's a great question. The quality of the chances that we create for our forward players, our attacking players. Like, when is the last time you can think of where you saw a guy go through on goal? I mean, was there an Aubameyang one against Wolves that he should have scored? Something like that. But, like, with the ball at his feet, we're like, Aubameyang's missed chances are headers.
Yeah.
He's not getting into positions. And even today, there was a moment where, you know, they were talking about how it was great defending. He was shown onto his left foot or whatever it was. There was one in the first half and there was one in the second half as well where he had a left-footed shot blocked. I think the first half one, he back-heeled it to Saka. But I'm thinking, like, you know, 2 months ago, Aubameyang cuts in and his speed of thought and movement lets him get a shot away. But now it's like, it's so rare that the ball gets to him in shooting areas. He's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and look, what Son's experiencing is a bit of what Aubameyang experienced last season. I think he's overperforming his XG. You know, he's flying. Everything he does is coming off for him. And Aubameyang looks a bit bereft of confidence, but that's probably going to happen when there's not much coming your way. And you know, you talk about a player going through on goal. Arsenal just, I've said it so many times, but Arsenal just build up play far, far too slowly. We don't counter-attack effectively. And when are you slinging crosses in? You're doing it when the defence is massed in front of you, which says you've got there too slowly. Or it says you're losing and you're chasing.
Yeah.
That's when teams start crossing. You know, it's no coincidence that in games where we lose, we're throwing in a load of crosses because teams that are losing get desperate.
Yeah. It is a bit desperate, though. You can understand. It is.
Well, that
desperate.
Word keeps coming up. Yeah. I mean, and I, you know, listen, I've got a lot of affection for Mikel Arteta. He's an Arsenal player, Arsenal captain. He's the Arsenal manager now. And I don't really disguise that. But I think looking at him tonight, I sort of thought, ooh, you look a bit stuck here. He's so commanding, you know, usually in his press conferences, so in control. And I just thought, yeah, I don't know if he knows. I don't know if he knows the answer right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big, broad existential question, you know.
Yeah.
How do we stop being shit?
Well, yeah. But how do you score goals is quite a fundamental question when it comes to football, isn't it? It's sort of like, it's sort of the whole thing, in a way.
It is.
You can't win without scoring a goal.
Can we say that cross after cross after cross after cross to strikers who aren't renowned for their aerial prowess is at least one way of not scoring them, so it puts you slightly closer to the solution?
Maybe, but this isn't the first thing we've tried. I mean, I honestly don't know, Andrew. If he said, well, look, you know, Spurs were defending deep. They were defending narrow. We had no alternative. Mm. We tried to pack the box and play the odds. I'd be like, fair enough. Mm. But it's when he's like, yeah, well, plan A was pretty effective, I think you'll find. somebody find me Stuart Downing and Andy Carroll.
Whoa.
January window's coming up.
Yeah.
The Fellaini thing is frightening. I mean, you know, we spent so long hoping that Arteta was going to emulate Guardiola. We forgot to, you know, mention that he might be emulating Moyes.
Mm. And on that cheery note, we will. I think we'll leave it there for part one. We need to take a break. I need to refill my glass. I need to find some questions to deal with some of the bigger issues that we're going to have to discuss. So let's do that. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog. Also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. If you are, thank you so much for being with us through these difficult times. But look, it's ups and downs. It's football. I'm sure it'll come around again. That's not how it works, isn't it?
It's
not very convincing, is it?
Yeah. Shall we do questions, though?
Yeah.
It's the least we can do for the listeners is try and answer some of their questions.
Great empires always rise again, don't they, and refine their glories. That's how it works, right? Right?
Did you read Roy Smith's piece in the New York Times?
Someone sent it to me, and I really like Rory's writing and everything else, but I couldn't quite
face it
before the Derby.
It was interesting headline. I mean, I haven't read it, but the headline was "Nothing Lasts Forever," and then the subtitle: "Arsenal's recent history is a case study in slow, steady decline. What's happened to Arsenal isn't really meant to be possible in the super club era, but they're proof that wealth only entrenches the elite if they make the right decisions."
Mm. Yeah.
Cheers, Rory. He called that to a T.
Sure
Imagine
did.
If we'd won the game.
He'd look foolish now, let me tell you. I will read that at some point tomorrow, just to sort of cheer myself up a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah.
Here is a question to start us off from the Discord. It comes from Sahil Bansai, who says, Is it time to drop Aubameyang from the Premier League squad? I hope he scores some goals in the cup competitions, but maybe we need to leave him out of the Premier League games until his form returns.
For who, would be my question.
That was the very phrase that went into my head. Like, we can't score goals with him. Who the fuck is going to score without him?
Well, can I just... We will come back to the Aubameyang discussion.
Balagoon! Balagoon! Balagoon!
Well, what about behind him? There must be some other child prodigy we can call upon.
Yeah, there's probably like some kid with a double barrel name that we haven't heard of, you know, like Chesterson Wilsonstein, something like that.
Jeffrey Megagoals in the under-12s.
If only there was a clue in his name, what he might be able to do for the team.
Ollie, who's at World of Ollie, said, how many goals are actually in this team? If you go through the squad and put an average or guesstimate on their season contribution per player, I don't really think there are very many. And that is a good point, isn't it? I mean, yes, we're scoring no goals, but I don't know. Apart from Aubameyang.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Lacazette, you know, 15 or something.
Yeah.
You
Lacazette
would expect.
Can score goals. We know that. Pepe can score goals. Goals from midfield, I think I've said to you time and time again, we do not have players who can score goals from midfield. I think that's a big problem for us. You know, not having any central midfielder who can really score goals. That Joe Willock is our best goal threat from central midfield, with the greatest of respect to Joe Willock, is telling at like the limitations of the other players that we have in those positions. Xhaka doesn't score. Elneny doesn't score. Ceballos doesn't really score.
He doesn't score, Ceballos. He doesn't even really run beyond the penalty box.
No,
to be
I mean, he's had, what did he score? He scored one goal in a really early game, didn't he, in his first season?
Yeah, in the Europa League, where he sort of towed it over the line. And then he scored
against Sheffield United.
In the Cup.
Yeah, and that's it.
I think that might be it.
That's it.
So anyway, you know, clearly goals are an issue, and particularly goals from midfield are a massive, massive issue. Coming back to Aubameyang, I don't think you can drop him, because we haven't got enough to be dropping him.
No, what we have to do is get him scoring again. Not, you know, if we had fucking Sergio Aguero sitting on the bench, you'd say, well, okay, Aubameyang, you know, you're not doing it, so we're going to give some other hot shit striker a game, but we don't have it. You can't drop Aubameyang for Nketiah, I'm sorry.
No, you can't. And I think, I mean, maybe his role, maybe his position is up for debate again. You know, maybe you say, do we go back to what we were doing before? Not that it was working in the early part of the season, I accept, but there is at least precedent for it.
Mm.
You know, he just looked miserable, I thought, today. And it's really difficult because he is getting no service, right? So very, very limited service.
Yes.
But there have been occasions in the past couple of years where things have come to him and I've thought, well, you're not where you were last season. You know, like you mentioned that moment in the first half where he sort of half seemed to be, second half I think it was, sorry, where he sort of half seemed to be through on goal but sort of didn't quite open up for him in the way you expect. Or even when that Tierney cross, I think it was, found his head. And I just thought, you're just not where you were. And with strikers, it is so complex, like, you know, form and confidence and millimetres make such a big difference. Milliseconds make a big difference. But he's not at that level, I think, even though the team is a big part of it. You know, they have their guilt in this, but I don't think... I mean, basically, he dug us out of holes at points over the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And he's lost his shovel. I think, don't you?
Yeah.
He's lost his mojo.
Yeah, I think he's going through a period of really bad form, which is coinciding with a team that's going through a period of really bad form. And, you know, it's impossible.
And to be scoring goals,
He'd
probably have to be in exceptional form right now. He'd have to be scoring chances you wouldn't expect him to score, or with a surprising degree of efficiency. I mean, the trouble is, that is what he was doing last season.
You'd need to be fucking Superman to be scoring goals at the moment. Yeah, look, the other sort of aspect of this is that the coincidence, if you want to call it that, that it's come pretty much straight after he signed that big new contract, that adds another dimension to maybe the pressure that he's feeling as well. Maybe there's an element of that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, he doesn't look like a happy guy at the moment, and he shouldn't be happy, and nobody at Arsenal Football Club right now should be happy with what's going on and what's happening and everything else. You know, a few goals and a few results changes the mood in a big, big way, of course, but it's just difficult to see how we're going to do that.
No, and he is the captain and he is the leader and, you know, in some ways of this squad, and he is the, you know, the top player.
Yeah.
And this is a point where we need those guys to be stepping up. I mean, just on the contract thing, I think sometimes people, if the contract gets raised, it doesn't necessarily mean, oh, well, he's just some greedy bloke, and once he got his money, he just stopped giving a shit. Like, he just threw in the towel and thought, I'll pick up my paycheck now.
Yeah.
That's not, I think, what anyone is ever suggesting. But I do think it's entirely possible that there is a kind of subconscious element to this. That, you know, in the last year, he was playing for his future, wherever that might be. And, you know, the degree of motivation that provides on a subconscious level is absolutely enormous. And I think when you get recognition or you get a pay rise in any job, I do think that, you know, it changes things slightly.
Yeah, I'm not... Look, maybe. I think the motivation is to go out and score goals and win football games. You know,
yeah,
I know
that of course.
I think that's the primary one that every player...
You'd like to think, yeah.
Yeah, has. And look, Aubameyang got a very healthy pay rise, but it was just like sort of stacking a load of extra money on top of all the other money that he already has. You know, it's not like is like, well...
At what point do these numbers really mean anything?
Yeah, now I've got the money, I'm just going to put my feet up here and relax.
Finally. My 100th sports car. But, yeah, but what I'm saying is, like, I don't think it's conscious, is what I'm saying.
No,
do you know what I mean?
No, I agree. Yeah, I agree with that.
I think it's possible there's this, an unconscious element. And the other thing is, on the other side of the coin, if you asked him now, would you rather be on what you were on last season but at a club who's top of the league? I wonder what he'd say, you know. Mm. So, listen, it is not working. I mean, ultimately, when we talk about, like, the Pepe deal, right, and we say, crikey, that was a lot of money. Club laid out a lot of money there, but was there a plan to make it work? Was there a clear identity for how he would fit into the team? Well, you have to apply exactly the same thinking to Aubameyang and his contract. You know, when Arteta says, okay, Edu and, you know, Vinai and Rao, whoever it is, I want this guy, we've got to do the deal, we've got to pay the money, there's got to be a plan for that. And what was that plan? Was it putting him on the left? Was it putting him up top? Was it sort of fudging it and trying to figure it out on the fly? You know, I really believed, well, there must be a clear idea of how we're going to use him and what we're going to do with him.
Yeah, I think that had to be a big part of why he stayed because, you know, look, the money is a factor, of course it is, but I don't think it was the primary factor at 31 years of age, you know, for a player who wants to win things. Mm-hmm. So there must have been some discussion about what way the team was going to play, how we were going to set up. You know, what was the attacking formation going to be? Where does he fit into this? Who's going to be supplying him? All of those things. So whatever that plan was, it's not working.
And they got to get that working because that is, you know, that's a contract so big. That it's as big a weight around this club as anything else, you know, and a huge decision and a huge financial commitment.
Yeah.
So that's got to work. By the way, just on Willian, you know, your favourite player. Speaking of big financial commitments and financial millstones around the neck, the true test of Edu and Kia Jurabchan's relationship will be if Edu, if Kia consents to move Willian on somewhere very, very quickly. Do you know what I mean? Like, if they're such good pals, Kia's got to do us a solid and get this guy out to Saudi Arabia or something.
If they're such good pals, there's no way he's going anywhere. Look, I had a question. I think we had a question about Willian. Yeah. Let me see if I can find it here. It comes from Corner Kick Aficionado. Well, yeah, he's a well-named guy because we had plenty of those today. He said, has Willian overtaken Yaya Sanogo as the worst player to wear an Arsenal kit this side of 2000? Slightly tongue-in-cheek, I get it. But I, in my player ratings today, said that he was soaring up the charts in the top of the pops of the worst Arsenal signings of all time. And I know some people might think that's a bit of a joke, but I'm not joking. So far, based on age, based on contract length, based on what he's being paid, what he has produced in the past in terms of, you know, his performances for Chelsea and everything else, he has been an absolute disaster.
Yeah, well, I would say exactly the same thing about Willian as I just did about Aubameyang. You know, when you pay that sort of money for a player of that age, you better have a bloody good idea of what you're going to do with them and what they're going to offer you. And I don't actually hate Willian. Like, when he was at Chelsea, it's not like he was John Terry or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, I didn't arrive with, like, some big stigma about Willian. You know, it's even Sylvester, I sort of... He annoyed me and when he was at United. Willian, I sort of had no real feeling about. But maybe I'm realising why. Do you know what I mean? Like, maybe he never annoyed me because he was never that good.
The fucking Magnolia of footballers.
Yeah, and actually, like, I didn't think he was... The thing is, I don't think he's diabolical. I just think he's...
Shit.
Just think he's, like, meh. Like, he's just like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I mean, today, you know, maybe if Pepe is available, maybe he doesn't play. I don't know. I mean, he probably does. But yeah, I am. That's another one that just absolutely isn't working.
Mm.
And feels right now, I agree with you, like a terrible...
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those that if you're going to do what we did, which is give a 32-year-old player who's come from, from a club we hate, you know, and that's...
He is going to get judged harsher because of that.
Of course.
That's the reality.
That is the reality. So when you do that deal for that player and you give him that length of contract and you give him the Bosman signing on fee, which bumps his, you know, this talk about how his wages aren't that big. It's like, give me a fucking break. 32-year-old.
No, David Luiz is.
Yeah.
He just goes out to Rwanda on a commercial endeavor. But I mean,
You are going to get judged more harshly on that deal than if you spent money on, you know, an up-and-coming kid who didn't quite make it. At least people could see the logic of that and say, well, they saw some potential there and, you know, they had a bit of a gamble. It didn't quite work out. That's the way it goes in football. But when you're coming in as this established player, you know, with everything else that's going on, if you don't produce, you're in the fucking spotlight. And he's in the spotlight and it is not kind to him. And he should not... start our next game, Willian. I'll be really fucking unhappy if he starts our next game.
Oh, no. I've got a feeling you're going to be really unhappy.
So do I.
Actually, no. You might be all right. It's Dundalk.
Well, no, I meant Premier League game.
Yeah,
I meant Premier League. Start him against... No, don't even start him against Dundalk. Play all the kids against Dundalk, and then whichever kids are good, play them against fucking Burnley. Do something.
I think... I've played this scenario out on here before, but this is where Edu really comes under the spotlight for me. If Arteta tells you he wants Willian, you want your technical director to be the guy who says, that's a lovely idea, Mikel, but how about we sign this younger version of a player who can do similar things, rather than be the guy who goes, oh, good job you've said that, because his agent is actually a massive mate of mine.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Doesn't... look great.
No. Let's bring him in. You know that £72 million signing we made last year? He plays in the exact same position, so it's going to be great.
I mean, the thing is, if Pepe had worked out brilliantly, like, what's incredible is we spent 72 million on a player for the right wing, hasn't quite worked out yet. We then replaced him with a 32-year-old on a 3-year deal worth X million per year.
Who's been worse.
Which is probably worse. Yeah, exactly. I wonder what we're going to do in the next transfer window.
Willian is the best fucking thing that's happened to Pepe.
Yeah. I mean, that he's a huge reason for the change in perception of Pepe, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. In a funny way, he might save his standing among Arsenal fans. Yeah, well, Pepe gets better as well with every Premier League game he doesn't play,
yeah,
and every game Willian does play. It's a really bad one, and the only slim slither of consideration for kind of an alternative perception is just that thing of like, well, look how bad all the attackers are doing. Like, what is the common denominator here? Is it that they're all cunts, or is it that the system is a bit messed up? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah. It could be either at this point. I don't know.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
Well, listen. Ian Stone sent in a question.
Oh, I was going to ask you this one first.
Yes. Ian Stone, who will have been ruining the day Arsenal did not appoint Jose Mourinho as he demanded last November today. But how long, he says, has Mikel Arteta got? Burnley and Southampton coming up. If we don't get a win against either of those, with Everton away and Chelsea at home, will they lose their bottle and would it be justified?
It's a really great question. I don't think they will lose their bottle because I don't quite know whose bottle it is to be lost or who's going to be losing the bottle, if you like. Because I've thought about this and, you know,
well, listen,
I really...
Vinay ain't going to sack Arteta.
Well, look, I think like everyone really wanted Mikel Arteta to succeed and to come in and be great and to change things and change the culture and do all the things that he said he was going to do because, you know, I was tired of, you know, the things like Willian, you know, players coasting, signing the wrong age profile of players, all those things we were doing wrong. I wanted those things to change and I wanted the football to be good and I wanted, you know, the team to be cohesive and I wanted at least, you know, to see some semblance of a plan and a strategy because that was part of the issue with Unai Emery is that, like, I don't know what football this guy wants to play. I can't see who it is he wants us to be. And when Arteta came in, he at least said the right things. He said and he communicated things that resonated with me and I'm sure many other people. You know, he talked a good game. So I think I said here a couple of weeks ago, if we could play football half as well as Mikel Arteta talked, we'd be top of the league, right? But I think we're in a really worrying position in that if, let's say, it does go wrong in those games and the pressure mounts, and we don't score goals. Who's picking the next guy? Edu?
How much managing experience does Kia have? I'm just trying to...
Who are Kia's managerial clients? But, you know, no, genuinely, like, who's picking him? Because I think Edu is only still at the club because he sensed the way the wind was blowing.
He attached himself to Arteta.
He hitched his wagon to Mikel Arteta and probably created just enough distance between himself and Raul Sanyehi for him to survive. That's what I think. Mm. I'm not saying that based on any information, but I think that's the way it went. Smart guy, could see that Arteta was breath of fresh air, come in, talk about, you know, a new broom sweeping out the place and, you know, perhaps you're privy to some of the things that have been going on behind the scenes and it doesn't necessarily suit to be or wouldn't be good to be associated with some of those, right? Mm-hmm. So you go in with the new guy. And that's why I think he's still at the club. For me, he's far too closely associated with Raul and the Kia thing was an absolute fucking joke the way that guy was involved at levels in our football club that no agent should be.
Yeah, I don't talking think. Talking like he ran the place.
Going on fucking national radio and talking about, well, you'll see some things are going to change at Arsenal. And like, lo and behold, a couple of weeks later, we sack our entire scouting department. You know, things that he was privy to that he made public when he had no business making them public, even if he knew them. You know, small things like, for example, the Willian signing being done at his house. You know, that's not right. That's not right. I know it was COVID. I know there was a pandemic. I know all of that kind of stuff. But you cannot tell me that Arsenal couldn't have created a safe environment, you know, in which to sign a football player, like, you know, we did with Gabriel and like we did with, you know, other things that we did.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
So if you're telling me that Arsenal are going to bring in a new manager who will make everything better, great, do it. Same with every fucking player that's on the pitch. If you can find me a better player who will make us better, do it. You know, at this point, I'm sort of beyond having favorites. There are a few players that I would like to hang on to, you know, four or five maybe in this squad that I would go to bat for. The rest of them, you know, fire them into the fucking sun if you can bring in someone better, as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, if there's a change of manager, who's picking him? Like, Edu? Picking that? Like, we have put ourselves in a position where the reliance on this Arteta, Edu, do we call it a dream team? I don't know what it is. You know, is so, like, where do we go from here if this doesn't work? Like, the smartest thing Arsenal could do right now, if you're Stan Kroenke, if you're Tim Lewis, and you're reporting back to KSE, it will be to bring in a really fucking good football brain or two into the club. Ralph Rangnick, someone like that.
Well, so Tom Walsgrove asked, if I give you the power to remove and install one of the following from tomorrow, which do you choose? An ambitious owner, a competent and ruthless director of football, or an experienced, savvy manager?
I would say an ambitious owner, like a genuinely ambitious owner, because they will do and make decisions. The other things will follow based on their ambition, based on what it is that they want to do. Like, okay, I'm an ambitious owner. What do I want to win in football? I want to win the Premier League. I want to win the Champions League. How do I do that? What are the models that I need to follow? You know, who are the people that I need at a football club in order to make those things happen? And we have basically two football
the guys people. Who didn't get sacked.
Yeah. Like, we have got, like, at board level, what have we got? We've got, like, at a football executive level, we've got Mikel Arteta, who is the manager, and we've got Edu. And that is literally it. We've sacked the director of football. We sacked or we lost one of the most highly coveted recruitment guys in football who did great work at Dortmund. I know, like, with Mislintat, not everything came off, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, as a concept, as an idea, is that not what you want from a recruitment guy? We fucked off the contracts guy, or he decided to leave, but that, you know, as far as I'm aware, is a question of jump before you get pushed kind of thing. You know, who have we got? Who's making these decisions at the football club? And who are they accountable to, other than people who don't know the first fucking thing about football? And who are detached and removed, and I know there are reasons for that at the moment because of the pandemic, but they have been anyway, etc., etc. So, yeah, the answer to that question would be an ambitious owner, like someone who is genuinely, genuinely ambitious and for whom Arsenal wasn't just part of their collection of mid-level, underperforming, non-winning franchises. Is that fair?
I think it is fair. I mean, I think if you... Yeah.
What would you choose?
Well, I think I would choose the owner. But I think that it's probably not plausible right now. And if you were asking me between a manager and a technical director, I'd probably go with technical director. I know that some people think that's crazy in the circumstances, but...
I think I would go with, yeah, right now, you know, if you know, obviously the ownership thing isn't going to happen. But I would certainly like to see somebody with real experience come in at a football level to, you know, to basically oversee. And that's difficult now because they've made Arteta the manager. But, like, if you
they
have
can walk that back pretty easily, I think.
But if you have the right technical director, then the manager, the football manager, rename him, whatever you want to call him, the head coach or everything else, if your technical director who's basically going to shape the way your club operates and the way it operates in the transfer market, the football that it plays, all of those things, like at the moment we just do not have any kind of identity whatsoever. And our technical director, I think, is quite lucky to be in the job that he's in. And I know it's only been a couple of months since Raul got sacked, and you know, we haven't really given them time. So maybe I'm being super harsh here on Edu. Maybe in January we'll see a bit more. Maybe next summer we'll see a bit more. Yeah. But I think that's a very optimistic outlook right now. So yeah. 1, 2, and 3, my preference is owner, technical director, and then an experienced manager. An experienced manager might in the short term, short perhaps to medium term, be good enough I don't mean paper over the cracks, right? But to sort of produce results that are more befitting with where we want to be. But, you know, can anyone really look at Arsenal right now and think that there aren't serious issues that we have to address one way or the other, whether it's Mikel Arteta or somebody else?
Can I tell you a funny thing about Arteta?
Yeah.
He's been the opposite in some ways of what I expected. In that I thought he would be the kind of coach who would be great for sort of, with a sort of long-term vision, have very clear style and an idea of how he wanted to play. But I didn't think he'd be a firefighter, you know. I didn't think he'd be a guy who could come in the middle of the season and get the best out of what's available and turn things around. And I do think he did do that to an extent last season. And I don't think that should be lost or forgotten. I think performances that he got out of players who had seemed completely lost, you know, under the previous manager, maybe the previous couple of managers, were pretty remarkable at times. But once we got to the summer and once we got to moving forward, and him laying down a blueprint to build on for the future, it does feel like it's got lost a bit. And it's just weird. It's just, that's kind of, it's kind of the opposite of what I expected. Do you know what I mean? I expected him to be a longer-term guy and not a short-term guy. And I know we're not into the long-term yet, but...
Yeah. I mean, look, I think as well, sometimes nobody needs to do anything, but... I'm not telling anyone else what to think or anything else, but you know, the circumstances of his first year at Arsenal have been extraordinary. Extraordinary, yes. By the very basic definition of the word, between, you know, COVID, lockdown, all the various issues that have gone on. And some of those have been down to him, or in part down to him as well. All the things that have gone on, the financial impact. It's not been a normal summer. There hasn't been a preseason, really. All of those things are, I think, not excuses, but I think they're perhaps reasons as to why things aren't going quite as well as we might like. And maybe the fact that experienced managers are dealing with it a bit better tells you that, you know, his inexperience, which is completely understandable, is a bit of a problem in this very, very short-term period that we're in.
Well, we didn't know there was going to be a pandemic when we appointed him, did we? That's for sure. I mean, what about this question from Scott Rogers Wolfson on the Discord? I think we should come back to sort of Ian's, you know, how long has Arteta got at some point. But would Mikel be in a more secure position had he not won the FA Cup and qualified for Europe? By getting that win, he raised expectations, giving himself less time on the training ground with the European games and less time for the players to rest between games. Do we as fans need to accept that winning the FA Cup was a bonus and that this was always going to be a transition year?
It's a good question, because you could look at the FA Cup as something that gave him credit in the bank.
Credit, yeah.
You know? So there's two ways of looking at that. You know, and
did it make us feel like we're closer than we were, though?
I think it might have done, yeah. I think it might have done, particularly given that we beat Man City in the semi-final and we beat Chelsea in the final. You know, it wasn't a case of scraping past Wigan and then beating Hull. You know, we beat two very good teams, very rich teams who'd spent an awful lot of money. So maybe, yeah, maybe it did. Maybe.
Can I make
it,
another point?
Yeah.
If we, let's say we've gone out of the FA Cup, quarterfinal stage, semi-final to Man City.
Yeah.
We trundled on through the rest of the league season, finished in mid-table, not qualified for Europe.
Yeah.
I wonder how different our transfer business would have been as well. You know, in that position, would they have made more of a decision of, well, we're going to go for the big rebuild. You know, we're going to sell our star striker and not sign Willian and, do you know what I mean, invest in a longer-term project. And then would our... I mean, of course, it's all what ifs, but like I do think that would change the complexion of this season. But yes, equally, on the other side of the coin, a lot of what Arteta has in the bank is because of that FA Cup final.
Yeah.
I mean, to come back to Ian's question, how long has he got? I mean, do you think there is any serious jeopardy for his job? I actually don't.
I don't think there is either, to be honest.
I'm not saying there shouldn't be.
No. I agree. But I think the circumstances in which we find ourselves, I'm sure Arsenal is a, you know, they're maybe a bit terrified by all this because they need for it to work with Arteta.
A lot of eggs in that basket.
And maybe they're looking at it and going, well, look, here it is. This is something that we thought might happen when we appointed an inexperienced manager. Mm. That he was going to hit a period when things didn't go well and, you know, you're heading towards some kind of rock bottom, if you like. But I don't... I think they just... don't have the people there to make decisions like that.
Yeah, and I think I just don't think they will risk losing face to that extent.
No. You know,
there's such a public commitment to Arteta.
Do you think, let me ask you this, managers often get the when the board says vote of confidence. The dreaded vote of confidence. That's what it's actually known as, dreaded. Do you think that they will back him in January with money to bring in players?
I think they will, yeah.
Yeah.
I think they will. You know, we reported on The Athletic that they're looking to. I think they will. And I think Arteta's put pressure on them too. I mean, he made some big comments this week, didn't he, about, you know, five or six players away.
Yeah, midfielders. Big teams need midfielders who can score goals. That was one of the things that he said.
Very
as well.
Pointed. I mean, I think, well, at this rate, they're going to have to salvage something from this season. And I think they have to as well, just because however long-term this plan is, it can't just be left to be, you know, years and years. We need to do everything we can to accelerate it and to sort of keep their, you know, the clearly owner's intention is we've gone with Arteta, we're backing him, we're investing in him. If they want to keep that going, they've got to improve this team. You know, I almost think they have to do it to spare their blushes.
Yeah.
And that's why I think they will. And it will help to a degree. It will help to a degree, but...
yeah, I mean, the thing is, problems. Like, Arteta's got to keep the players on board during this period. He has to keep the players on board.
Mm.
And I think when... you know, they're human too, and I'm not excusing them in any way, I should point out, but, you know, they have to be aware of how bad our football is right now.
Yeah. I mean, yes. But saying that, Graeme Souness, right? I don't know if you were watching Sky.
I watched a bit of it and then I sort of muted it and turned it back on a little bit. And,
right. So after the game, he really sort of tore into Spurs. And bizarrely, he seemed to reveal that he was a Spurs fan, which blew my mind.
He joined Spurs as from Scotland, didn't he?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Well, he was like, yeah, my first love, Spurs, he referred to them as.
Yeah.
But he was saying, you know, as a player in this Mourinho team, you know, you wouldn't enjoy it. You wouldn't, you know, it's hard to motivate yourself to play like that. And I was watching that thinking, they've just won the derby 2-0. I don't think they give a fuck. Like, results are everything, aren't they? Like, Arsenal believed in Arteta when he beat... The players loved it when they beat Man City and Chelsea and, yeah. You know, they... And they weren't playing Harlem Globetrotter stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I heard some of that discussion because I think Alex Scott asked Jamie Redknapp, you know, what would you as a guy that like to get on the ball... Would you like to play that way or would you like to be a bit more expansive, et cetera, et cetera? And I was thinking the same as you. Like, who gives a fuck when you're winning?
Exactly, yeah.
Nobody does
when you're winning.
We've just beaten Arsenal 2-0. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah, they played Man City, Chelsea and...
Hang on. We're top of the league.
I know. You know, I'm sure they're all gutted. I'm sure they're all absolutely gutted.
They must be fucking miserable. Yeah,
I mean, crying at the training ground.
Yeah,
every day.
I mean, Lo Celso must be sitting at home now, going, "Oh, what a terrible evening I've had. I just, you know, created a break which ended in, you know, Harry Kane's record-breaking goal for Tottenham to beat Arsenal 2-0. Boo-hoo! I can't play any through balls. Get the fuck. It's just nonsense.
I suppose the only reason I bring that up is like Arsenal aren't playing. Well, at the moment, and they're not getting results, and nothing affects a player's happiness more than the outcome. A player doesn't really like. Ultimately, if players have won, they go home happy. If a striker's got his goal, he goes home happy. That's it. And those things aren't happening. The players are going to be unhappy. Arteta's biggest job, you're right, is to keep these players. Half of whom he said essentially are shit on board with a long term project. Like, that's a really tough battle.
Yeah.
To be like, listen, Granite, I know you're effectively dispensable in the evolution of this team in the next 2 to 3 years.
Years, Jesus Christ. My heart, James.
But like, I need you to really focus up here. Or Rob Holding, I know I tried to loan you to Newcastle or was certainly up for the idea in pre-season because eventually I want another right-sided centre-half.
Not the £30 million one we just bought.
Or no, another one. But, you know, just stay with me on this project. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Mm. It's very, very hard when you don't win matches. Mm-hmm. And I know that might be a really facile point. But it's the tension between long and short term, and somehow he's got to find that balance.
Well, the best of luck to him, because, he's not doing it at the moment. Here's a couple of questions. Mange Man and the E on the Discord says, reactions to Tierney throwing long, and one of the many questions that we had from Twitter, this one comes from Gunnar Lover, who's at Gunnar Lover 49. Many questions on this one. He said, I think we need a whole podcast analysis to find out why Bellerin can't take a fucking throw in. What the fuck is going on with that?
I don't know. Was it a foul throw, this one?
I can't remember. I didn't see it.
I didn't think it was that bad. I think basically what's happened is...
They've noticed.
And the referees' WhatsApp group have gone, look out for Hector.
Yeah. They're all doing it.
Because I think there are probably a lot of them are doing it. Yeah.
They're all fucking doing it. Should I do it? I have to do a sad one. I've run like this my whole life. Sad Hector.
We know Hector. We see it every week. But like, yeah, that is a problem. So he's being watched. So he basically needs to sort of knuckle down really nail the technique for the next few months and they'll stop watching him.
Yeah, it is one of the most difficult things in the game, though.
It is, famously. And it's not like we have a specialist set piece coach. As for the long throws from Tierney, that's just where we really keenly felt the absence of Fellaini, didn't we?
We did. I mean, doesn't Rory Delap's son play for Man City? Can't we, like, bring him in? He's probably got the same
£30 million
kind of
pound bid incoming.
Yeah. I mean, they're not even long throws. I love Kieran Tierney, but they're not long throws. They're kind of medium throws. They're not.
Can I tell you a weird thing about Kieran Tierney?
Yeah.
I really like him. I think he's really good. Sometimes I think he's in the wrong team. Do you know what I mean?
Like,
I don't know, just like his style of play, like, he's got some fantastic qualities. I love him. Don't get me wrong, he's one of my favourite players in the team. But the way he bombs on and the types of crosses he swings in, I just sort of think, I'm not sure anyone else on this team is really suited to this apart from you.
Maybe. I tell you who is suited to Kieran Tierney.
Who?
Martinelli.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Telling you, that's a partnership.
I hope so. I really hope so. I mean, it might sound a very odd point. I just think, like, stylistically,
He's quite an old-fashioned player, yeah. He's an old-fashioned fucking socks-around-the-ankles kind of player.
He's like a 90s, yeah, fullback. And he's brilliant. He's brilliant.
1890s.
Yeah, he's great. He's great. I just sort of, yeah, I just have that slight concern of, like, stylistically, it doesn't seem... Well, it doesn't feel very Arsenal at times. But then I'm like, well, what is that? So,
yeah,
who knows?
Nobody fucking knows at this point.
Question from Denarona says, why do you think we've moved away from 3-5-2 when we cannot beat less teams with four at the back? Seems totally nonsensical given our form and the success we had before. I mean, I think we know why we did it. It was to try and score goals.
Mm.
We've realised that's actually impossible.
It's much more difficult doing it the way that we're doing it.
Would you go back to it? Or would you be like, fuck it, we'll just play the four now. Just be crap.
I think... well, given that party's going to be out for fuck knows how long at this point, I think I would go back to it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's this idea, and we've said this many times before, this idea that three at the back is somehow mega defensive. But, you know, 3-4-3 can be a really attacking formation, a really attacking way of playing if you can make it work. What I would very seriously consider, and I know I said this about Willian earlier on, and, you know, you were saying I was going to be sad to see Willian in the team, and I will be very sad to see him in the team. I'd like to see some recognition in our team selection that some of the players who Arteta has put his faith in have not repaid that. And for some younger players, maybe to be given a go. You know? Maybe that's part of what some of these guys need.
Well, it's easy to forget when you watch this Premier League team, but we've got quite a good Europa League team. And I know they're not playing anyone great, but we could do worse, couldn't we, than just attempt at least to replicate some of that.
Well, I mean, look, you can bring Pepe back for the next game and, you know, you can have Nelson on the bench and you can actually use Maitland-Niles if you want to. You know, things like that.
Pepe's got another game, hasn't he?
Does he have one more?
He got sent off against Leeds, Wolves, Spurs. Yeah, he's got one more, I'm afraid. Okay. But Nelson...
Smith-Rowe,
Willock, yeah.
You want a midfielder who can score a goal?
Smith-Rowe.
Yeah. You know, just something.
I mean, maybe, Andrew, yeah. Yeah, but I mean, maybe.
Look, you know what the worst thing about this is? The worst thing about the position that we're in right now? You know that fucking Einstein meme that goes around?
Mm.
The insanity is the whatever it is. It's doing
insanity
the same thing.
Insanity is posting this meme again and again and expecting anyone to give a shit.
Yeah. But that one, that it used to be. Every time we didn't play well or we lost a game when the Wenger era was coming to an end, somebody, millions of people, in fact, would always post that fucking Einstein meme, insanity is doing the same thing over and over and hoping to get the same result. Fuck off. I'm seeing that now, and I don't like it. So let's stop doing the same things over and over and maybe do something very slightly differently and acknowledge that the guys, you know, they haven't done what you want them to. And that could be in part down to Arteta. It is, of course, in part down to Arteta and the way he set up his team and everything else. You know, we have a question here from the Discord from Eichhorst, who says, why are virtually all of our players underachieving? Every other team in the Premier League seems to do much more with less. I don't believe our players are so totally devoid of talent, so why are we getting so little out of them? So there is something to be said for, like, all of them being crap at the one time. You know, they've all fallen off a cliff. Nevertheless, when you're an experienced player, you have a bit more responsibility to perform. And, you know, just something maybe to shake up the comfort zone a little bit would be good.
Got to be worth a try. I do think we'll beat Burnley.
I hope you're right.
I think we will. I think we might even beat Dundalk in the week as well.
I think we might do that, but...
I think we'll get a couple of results. What's the league table look like? Dare we look at that?
I don't want to look. I think we're in 15th.
Yeah, it's not the best I've ever seen.
No.
I mean, what's worrying about it is that the table's starting to look normal.
The spread is beginning to happen.
The top six are the big five and Leicester.
Right.
There is this supposed big six in the Premier League. Well, five of those are in the top six. One's 15th.
Oh, I just looked at the fucking BBC football page and now I see Liverpool have beaten Wolves 4-0. Oh, man.
And they haven't even got any players who aren't injured. They're missing, like... This is supposed to be a vulnerable Liverpool. They're doing very well. Spurs are top.
Mm.
Leicester got a last-minute winner, didn't they? Jamie Vardy.
Mm.
He scored from a one-on-one. I've never seen anything like it.
One-on-one? What is this?
Yeah, he was played through.
What?
A guy called James Maddison, in a number 10 shirt, played a through ball, which is like a pass which goes in behind the defenders. Imagine there's space behind the defenders because you're sort of progressing the ball quickly.
Hang on. Okay, yeah, I'm imagining that.
And then the striker... He runs into the space behind the defenders and then he kicks the ball.
Get out.
In past the goalkeeper into the net.
This is fucking... Wow.
Sorcery. It's Brendan Rodgers' sorcery.
They'd burn them as witches back in my day.
So Leicester are fourth in the Champions League spots. We are 8 points off that.
Mind the gap.
We are only five ahead of... No, six ahead of Fulham.
Right.
Look.
It's not great, James.
I can't lie, it's not great. Some people will be like, why aren't we all hashtag Arteta out? I think people will be saying, why aren't you saying Arteta out?
Well, I think we talked about that.
Yeah, we did sort of talk about that. Mm. I'm losing track of things. Yeah. It's
late.
Maybe
at night
this
now.
Is enough.
I think it is. We tried to cover everything in as much detail as we possibly could without losing our minds in the process.
We failed.
I think we have failed. But look, we did our best. We tried really hard.
Good. We got to talk about the league table. That was a good, nice little detour to finish.
Yeah, nice way to finish. Like part one, it ended on a really upbeat note.
I'll tell you one last thing that really pissed me off, just quickly.
Okay.
Go on. Know your shit when Mourinho praises your team.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know if you saw or heard.
No, come on. There's only so much punishment I can take in one day. And sitting and actually listening to Jose Mourinho talk is
beyond the pale. He was laying on the compliments thick. And I thought,
no,
that's a bad.
I saw Andrew
sign.
Allen tweeting about it. Yeah,
that's a bad sign.
James, I'm going to take a big drink of bourbon right now.
I was just imagining that you just passed out immediately and I was left alone on the podcast.
No, I just needed that to steel myself, you know, for putting the rest of it together, getting it out this evening, giving people something to listen to that they may not want to.
They might fall asleep to it. It might haunt their dreams.
Oh, my God. Yeah. All they'll hear is the exasperated horse all night. Do you ever get that thing where you wake up? Do you ever, like, you're sort of just about to fall asleep and then you get that falling sensation? Does that ever happen?
Yeah,
but just before you fall from the background, you'll just hear
the horse of doom.
Fuck off, horse. We do not want you anymore. Go away. We don't want to have to talk about you or make noises by you on the podcast. Okay, we're going to...
By the way...
Go on. Are you going to tell me another thing now that...
No. I'm just going to say anything positive or complimentary that I said about Tottenham's performance, I don't want any of you listeners repeating that to anybody, all right? I said it because I was upset in the heat of the moment. I never want that referenced ever again. Let's never speak of it.
Let's never speak of it. You know what we should do? Just maybe win our next game in the Premier League. See the way I did that there, expecting us to beat Dundalk. Yeah, win the next game, and that would be good. But, you know, could win the lottery as well.
Yeah, exactly.
About as much chance.
I'm looking forward to a relegation battle. It'll be, you know, something different.
Those, my friend, are famous last words.
Yeah.
All right, look, we're going to leave it there. Thank you, as ever, for being with us. Like I said to James the other day, we are only mere chefs in the world of Arsenal. We can only serve up the ingredients which we are delivered.
It's like Ready, Steady, Cook.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that show?
No.
Contestants bring in a bag of food and then the chefs have to make something with it.
Right.
If you bring us a bag of shit, there's only so much we can serve up.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we are hugely dependent on what they do.
We are very talented chefs, but our powers have limits.
It's the system. The system and the formation, that's the problem. That's all we can do. Anyway, look, we'll leave it there. It's getting late on a Sunday night. I'm going to get this out and put it up. We will catch you on the next one. We'll obviously have post-Europa League podcast on Friday and everything else. So until then, take it easy, mind yourselves, and if you see the Horse of Doom, tell him to fuck off as well.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.